bottoms, same bottoms for a while? Simmer, what's your max on bottoms?
Bottoms of PJs?
Yeah.
Well, you need to change them up. I don't wear PJs.
Well, I'm just the average. Your advice.
I don't know. I see these TV shows, even watching Ozark. I'm like, come on, man. Who's wearing these freaking two-piece pajama things? You got to change your gear every day. And as long as the gear is good to go, track pants, I'd say 3 days on track pants.
3 days. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. There you go. There's your sage words of advice.
As long as the gear and socks and T-shirt are clean, then I think you're good to go.
Okay. All right. So it is a Monday after the weekend. Short work week ahead if you are still working, because Friday, of course, is Good Friday. Long weekend straight ahead. And we have a very busy show on the way. Noel Hoffenmeyer of the 67s just signed a pro contract on the weekend with the Toronto Marlies. After a stellar 5-year career with the 67s, he's going to join us on the show. James Boyd, GM of the 67s, will be by later on this hour. We'll talk about the OHL draft, which happened on Saturday. And Eric Macromello will talk about the legal ins and outs of where we are in this COVID sports world right now. But as we do each and every weekday morning at this time, we always say good morning and a hearty Monday hello to Pierre McGuire. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Good morning, JR. I'm doing fine, thank you. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Pierre.
All right, Pierre. You were, as we signed off with you on Friday, you were wondering about how this weekend ahead was going to be. So, how did you get through the weekend?
Well, we got through it fine. I mean, we just quarantined at home and spent a lot of time walking around our neighborhood, which doesn't have a lot of people in it. So that's the good fortune for us. It wasn't so good for the people around the tri-state area. It was a pretty tough weekend for everybody here. And I think probably everybody in North America. I mean, it's become really, really difficult when you get text messages from friends who say significant others or family members have passed away because of this dreaded virus. It's an unbelievable thing because, you know, you don't expect to get that on any normal weekend. And so it's unfortunate. It's a really tough time for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you live in Connecticut, which is a neighbor to the state of New York, but certainly Andrew Cuomo has talked, you know, he's got these daily press conferences, right? His news conferences where he's updating everybody about the situation in New York, where you're living, what, about an hour away or thereabouts?
Yeah, we're 50 miles, exactly.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. All right, let's get to the story. Not that there's a whole lot of hockey stuff from the weekend. We brought up, because we're celebrating hockey birthdays, as a way to kind of get some conversation started. Michel Bunny Larocque from way back in the day would have celebrated his birthday today, Pierre, of course. Passed away a number of years ago. Do you know why he was nicknamed? I don't know the answer to this.
Don't know the answer to
Bunny?
That either.
No? Okay. All right.
That's a good one, though.
Has there ever been a man who's, not that he wasn't a good goalie, but who fell into a better situation than backing up Ken Dryden with arguably maybe the one of the best, if not the best, hockey teams of all time, those Habs teams in the late 70s?
Yeah, Charlie Hodge, when he was backing up Jacques Plante in the 50s.
Okay.
That was pretty good. The late Charlie Hodge is a guy I worked with. Sean would remember him from the old days from Langley, B.C. He was a scout for Winnipeg with John Ferguson Sr., and then Charlie came over to us with Pittsburgh and did some really hardy work for us. And I used to love my trips going out to Vancouver. Charlie would pick you up at the airport, and then you'd drive up the Coquihalla Pass, and you'd stay at the Dome Motor Lodge up in Kamloops, and scout through there, and you'd see Robbie Niedermeyer, you'd see all those Jerome McGinley, you'd see all those great Kamloops Blazers, Darcy Tucker, just some really fun trips. And so if you ask me that question off the top of my head, yeah, one guy, Charlie Hodge.
He was the character of all characters and what made scouting such a special thing. Back in the day, as far as Michel Larocque, now I'm not going to go Bunny as far as him being born Easter week, but I'll throw that out there. what kind of starts would he get? Like, would Scotty pick back-to-backs back in the day, or like would he have tough starts? Like, how was that designed at the time?
I remember just, again, Scotty never talked to me about how he would start Bunny Larocque or any of those things, but I do know that he would pay attention to goalies' records versus other teams. So let's just say Sean Simpson's his goalie, and Sean has, you know, a 5-0 record in his last 5 starts against the Calgary Flames, and we're playing Calgary. Sean's starting. You know, that's just, Scotty would pay attention to those kinds of trends a lot. And so I have to imagine with Montreal, he would pay attention to those kinds of things, or he'd look at back-to-backs in terms of work-to-rest ratio for the, you know, obviously Ken Dryden at the time. But, yeah, no, definitely something that he paid attention to.
Always difficult, and it's conjecture, but, hey, this is the times we live in to compare hockey from different eras. But if you took those Montreal Canadiens teams from the late 1970s, you got the New York, now it wasn't, you know, you kind of transitioned right into those Islander teams of the early 80s, then the Oiler teams of the late 80s. Is there any team, do you think, from the last 20 years, if you think, okay, we could take those athletes and put them in today's game, is there any team in the last 20 years where you think absolutely they were of that ilk where they could have run and gotten 3, 4, 5 Stanley Cups in a row?
No, I don't think so. You mean move them back from this era to that
era?
Well,
I guess my point is because the salary cap and everything has changed, so you can't keep teams together.
That's
but
I'm
if you
saying,
think about a best of team from the, you know, one team from the last 20 years that they couldn't keep everybody together, but that would have been able to get a run had salary caps not existed, let's say.
Chicago.
Yeah.
Chicago would have been that team. I mean, would they win 3 and 5 or 3 and 6?
Yep.
So they would be the team that you could probably look at and say, yeah, they're the team. Or maybe L.A. if they could keep everybody and you know, keep everybody healthy because they had the goaltending, especially in those days. Quick was as good as anybody in the league. That being said, the thing that separated those Canadiens teams, and I know that you have a lot of loyal Montreal Canadiens listeners, even though you're in the Ottawa market, the thing that separated those teams more than anything else was their depth on defense in the Big Three with Robinson, Savard, and Lapointe. I mean, all three of them are just Hall of Famers, number one. But number two, big people that could really skate. And in those days, they just dominated games. You know, there's the most amazing moment. You have the Savardian spin around me. You have Lapointe going coast to coast. And you have Larry Robinson hitting Gary Dornhoff for the Philadelphia Flyers and breaking the boards in the Forum in Montreal. I mean, things like that just stand out. And they had defenseman that just separated that team from everybody else's team.
You look at that team to the Islanders, and certainly in the 80s we had the Oilers and Calgary, but at what point did hockey go, I don't want to say the wrong direction, Pierre, but there certainly all of a sudden was such a turn to size away from skill. We got into a pretty nasty era. Was it supply and demand where maybe the National Hockey League without a real European influence and American influence just expanded too quickly?
Well, it could be that, but I think the copycat portion of it too, we talked about Cliff Fletcher and what he did, and I think one of the things that happened with the Calgary Flames, and they became such a good team, even though they kept running into Edmonton, but they wouldn't take anybody under 6 feet unless it was Theo Fleury or Peter Lapin. Those were the only really two guys that were short players. Everybody else was 6 feet or better, and everybody wanted to try to keep up with them, and it wasn't that easy to do. You know, they lost a player who they drafted in the first round, George Palawa, who a lot of people, he never played a game in the NHL. I don't even know if he, I don't think he ever saw a day at training camp. He died in a car accident right after he got drafted, a kid out of Minnesota high school. There are a lot of people that think that he may have been, based on what he had done, maybe one of the best power forwards in the history of the National Hockey League. And part of why he was taken, not just because he was a good athlete, just his size. So I think Calgary, more than anything else, probably changed a lot of the template for a lot of teams.
That was actually my draft year, and I still remember him on the draft floor. His shirt looked like a T-shirt. and sadly, that summer, his brother was drunk driving, went through a stop sign. He went right through the windshield and died. It was actually that same summer.
Yep.
Wow. Now, speaking of sports birthdays or hockey birthdays today, Hal Gill. If you had to guess, how old do you think Hal Gill is, Pierre?
I'll say 39.
45.
Wow, Hal.
Yeah, no, turning 45. No, played a lot of games with not a lot of points, but man, the enormous defenseman, right?
Well, here's the thing, great size. Here's the thing that nobody talks about enough with Hal. Hal was an unbelievable quarterback. There were a lot of people in football lexicon that thought Hal Gill was going to be as good or better than Drew Bledsoe, who is obviously a New England Patriots quarterback and was a star coming out of college in the States. There were a lot of scouts, and I have friends that run football teams that thought that if Hal Gill would have stayed with football rather than go to hockey, he would have had a chance to be a big-time quarterback. You know, with his size, 6'7", his athleticism. He's living down in Nashville right now. He works for the Nashville Predators. I see him a lot. 45. He looks real good for 45, I'll tell you that. And he's an unbelievable person. Really, really good. You think about, he broke in with Raymond Bork. He broke in with Raymond Bork and Don Sweeney. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I remember coming out of Providence College, people didn't think he could play. The other part that was a compliment, there were two defensemen that Jágr hated to play against. One was Richie Pilon, and the other one was Hal Gill. There were games that we played against Hal Gill. I know this sounds great. Like, strangely, we had to talk him into playing just because he felt like Hal had the ability down low in the reach to neutralize everything Jágr wanted to do.
Yep, and that's a fair point. It's absolutely spot on. The biggest thing, again, with Hal was his range, for a big man. He skated very, very well, but a little bit like Tyler Myers, not as quick as Myers, but very similar. But the other thing, his strength. Once he got his mitt, it was a little bit like your old defenseman, Rod Langway. Once he got his mittens on you, you weren't getting away. I mean, you were stuck and you were pinned and you weren't going anywhere.
Last but not least, on the birthday side of things today, Clark MacArthur turns 35. Of course,
wow.
His career has come to an end, unfortunately, too soon because of concussions.
Yeah.
His best season, Pierre, was 21 goals, 62 points with the Leafs back in 2011.
Yeah.
What was the most... Because, I think we saw him here in Ottawa, got the overtime winner to beat Boston in the playoffs. But what was maybe the most underrated part of Clark MacArthur's game?
Determination. He was, I can just tell you, the World Junior team in 2005, he was a really important part of that team. He never got enough credit for the way he played and helped that team, I can tell you right now. I mean, he was just hard on it all the time. He was a guy that never gave you an inch. He and Mike Richards were, depth center icemen on those teams, or that team in particular, and he was very good. But what I remember the most, and Sean would probably remember this, his junior years with Medicine Hat, he was way better than a point-a-game player, and he dominated in a real tough physical Western Hockey League. So his determination is a thing that never got enough credit.
Yeah, and I thought his time here actually may have been one of the better free agent signings throughout the entire National Hockey League. I mean, came in on that first contract, and you kind of looked, and you kept kind of trying to look, and that was also part of that conflict he had with Randy Carlyle, right, where Randy, old school, did not mesh very well, but he ended up being one hell of a player here in Ottawa before he got hurt.
No, he was outstanding, JR. And the thing, again, I can't stress enough on that World Junior team in 05 that just peppered with future Hall of Famers. He was a very important player when it came to big face-offs and penalty kills and things and creating energy for the better players. He was a big part of that.
So the Sens had, Pierre, this past season, three players on long-term injured reserve who didn't play any games, who helped them get to the salary cap floor. Marian Gaborik, Ryan Callahan, and Clark MacArthur. And MacArthur and Callahan are both coming, quote, off the books this year, but Gaborik's got one more year. What do you think will be, if we project into next season, what do you think is going to be the effect? And these guys on these long-term injured contracts, they're starting to peter out, right? The David Clarkson, his contract is up at the end of this year.
Yeah.
What do you think, with, in all probability, a 20% cut in the cap, if not more, what is going to be the effect, do you think, on teams who have these players, either from Ottawa's perspective that are helping them get to the floor, or from the Leafs' perspective where they put players on that they could sign other players? Like, what's going to be the impact, do you think, next season?
It's too soon to tell, but it's going to be significant. Now, I talked to an NHL manager yesterday, Sunday morning, actually, so that was yesterday. You lose track of days. And he was very concerned about what's going to happen in terms of the cap ramifications, and I completely agree. And now, he's with a team that maybe is not in as much danger as some others, but the big profile teams that have high-end players that have been signed to significant amounts of money, there's the potential for 30% of their income to be gone. And so this is going to be very interesting to see how it all plays out. I can't give you an answer because I know one thing. This general manager had no answers for me. He's in on daily calls, and he would know better than anybody. He didn't know.
There has been some talk that what they might do to sort of mitigate it, because, we've talked about the fact that some teams are already committed. Let's say the cap goes down to $60 million. They've already got more commitments, more than $60 million committed to next season.
Yeah, for
that
sure.
They might try to spread this out over several seasons. Does that sound like a workable solution to make to make it more feasible for all teams?
It sounds like a workable solution, but again, all this stuff has to be collectively bargained, and it takes two sides to get something done. And this is going to be a lot. For instance, I'll give you an example. Last week, it was reported that players were prepared to give up, some players, not all, some were prepared to give up, their last paycheck so that, the salary cap wouldn't have the draconian shrinkage that it looks like it's going to have. What wasn't reported in that, and this is important, is that last pay period that they were prepared to give up and still are prepared, some are still prepared, is only a 5-day window. It's not a 15-day pay period. So it's not nearly as significant a paycheck in terms of helping the players long term as would have been the last paycheck, which was a 15-day pay period. So it's pretty significant, JR, in terms of the negotiation process and actually making sure that everybody's on the same page. It's not that easy to answer.
Well, they're going to lose that money in escrow at some point anyway if they don't play the season.
You would imagine.
Yeah, Arizona's an example of actually a team now spending money. Host has got another year left. Do we see a contract like that in the move? And part of the CBA, this is also dead money that the players are actually not getting in the sense it could be spent. Would you think that the NHLPA will look to close the loophole, the paper contracts in the next CBA?
You would think. I would think so, but I don't know that for sure. I haven't spoken to anybody from their side. But I don't know that.
All right. On that note, we will let you go. Always appreciate the visit. We'll see what transpires. Usually when we get back into the week, there is some news that starts to bubble under. So we'll wait and see on that. But in the meantime, have a safe day and look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Jared. Thanks a lot, Sean. Be safe, everybody.
Which happened via the computer machine, like it has for several years. I mean, they almost would serve, not that it's going to be as... that the NFL draft won't be a huge production, and should it get to it, the NHL draft would be a much bigger production. But they've been doing it online in the OHL for years. That's the way they did it on Saturday. So we'll talk about what went down. 7 forward, 6 defensemen, and 2 goalies taken by the 67s on the weekend.
Yeah, and the NFL, I guess I really don't care in that instance. I guess the other part is, for most of the high picks or anybody, is usually that live webcam or live TV coverage, right, of the big draft party.
Yep.
And the one guy that's sitting there and the disappointment of the family. I'm going to assume that the individual is going to be in a room by himself. We'll probably get some video footage. And as far as the OHL draft, my curiosity as I comb through their picks is always, okay, you have your picks, but when you have the volume of picks and the number of players picked that the OHL has, how many of those are the flyers, right? Are they on American kids or kids that are committed to college that you decide after about the second or third round you might take a look or might interested to ask that to James.
Yep, so we'll look forward to talking to him in about 10 minutes. And Noel Hoffenmeyer signed his first pro contract. Of course, 67's defenseman for the last 5 years, leading defense scorer this year in the OHL, signed with the Toronto Marlies, an American Hockey League contract. We're going to talk to him next hour. I'm sure a very, very, in the middle of kind of troubled times, I'm sure very happy to get a pro contract and be able to know that he's whenever hockey comes back, that he's going to be able to start and get on the ice.
It really is. And people probably wonder why not an NHL contract. And a year ago, he had Ty Fjällhaber scored, 59 goals?
Yeah.
Signed as an overage. And in the American League this year, really struggled, played in the East Coast League. And not that that's bad, just, hey, it's a transition. And for Noel, whoever is representing him, this is a real good choice. The Marlies spend a lot of money on good players. They also spend a lot of money on development that if he goes and works for the next couple of years, might put himself into a terrific position to sign an NHL contract. And if he doesn't, probably at that point for his skill set, some options in Europe would open up for him. So, nope, that was a smart choice by Noel and his camp.
All right. I did mention last hour, because people have empties and everything piling up in their garage, because you've been home a lot, and the liquor store, and I'm assuming the beer store as well. They're not giving out exact numbers, but there's a lot of people buying a lot of stuff right now.
Yeah.
That the beer stores, of course, they accept the empties of the wine bottles as well. Apparently only 4 locations, according to a texter this morning. So he said, can you mention where they are? Cause people are going to bring it back to our store and it's not accepting empties. So on the West End in Kanata, it's the Eagleson Road location, College Square, which is the one by Algonquin, Selkirk Road, and 10th Line in Orleans. Those are the 4 beer stores that are accepting returns as of this morning. Because I also know there's a lot of people out there that are looking for something to do.
Yeah.
And if you can't go to the grocery store, it's like, what else can I do to pass an hour or 2 or 7? I know what I can do. I can return my empties today.
Yeah, I think about a month ago, I went out to the Manatic location. It was still open. Through my hard work and my Pinot Grigio, was able to acquire $6.
So $6?
That allowed... I know exactly.
Nice!
I just kind of... Well, I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't know what my expectations were. I still feel that there was a time, maybe I'm just, it's a long time ago. I feel like in my 20s, there were times where we cashed enough bottles to buy a case, but I could be wrong. So I felt a little underwhelmed by my performance.
Yes. Let's see here. Hey, guys, thanks for everything you're doing. Just an FYI, I mentioned that the province closed more, I guess, essential services on the weekend, right? Non-essential construction sites have now been closed. The cannabis stores, which is how we kind of gone on that topic, were closed as of Saturday night as well. And I mentioned hardware stores,
okay.
But As someone pointed out, FYI, hardware stores like Home Depot are open to online orders and pickups. So you can give them your order number from your online purchase. They'll come and bring it to you outside while you're waiting your vehicle. So didn't want to suggest that anybody's out there looking for a fix-it, right?
Yeah.
Do some work on the home front, because I know a lot of people, first of all, houses have never been cleaner in the history of man than they are right now. And garages, I'll say that as much. I never saw as many people out doing stuff to their lawn as I did this weekend, and it's...
Is now the time?
It's the first weekend of April. People are looking for... People are raking. There's a guy down the street. He's got 8 bags of, like, sticks and stuff out there to be picked up tomorrow when the truck comes around. Like, people are looking for stuff to do. You know, cleaning the deck off, whatever it is. Like, there's still... So you can still get your hardware and stuff if you're looking to, I don't know, finish your basement or whatever it is.
Now, I did take the ice because I had a bunch of ice still on my deck in the backyard, so I took the ice off of that in preparation for the barbecue. I don't want to touch the lawn yet because it's just the seedlings right now. They're just starting. You don't want to rip it up and have some bald patches on your lawn.
Listen, rip it up, then you're going to have the opportunity to reseed, and that's going to waste another weekend that you're looking for something to do. There's method to the madness.
This is also dog crap weekend, or in and around it, right?
Yeah.
You got the dog crap. You get that first layer. Then
the
you're looking to... How will this affect guys, though, when it comes to landscaping, right? Now, a lot of, I guess, materials could be dropped off, but I've got to think a month from now, that'll be probably a pretty big phase of people wanting to do something to their properties. And as you said, you're going to have to get some of the, I'm assuming you'll get materials still delivered, like dirt and everything.
You know what?
That might be right with the hardware stores, right? Maybe you make your order online to get it and you go and pick it up.
Yeah, I would just, again, don't know for sure, but you just got to think of the place where it's coming from. Right. So can people who, I don't know, go out and get the dirt, can they do it to where they're not coming in contact with other people, like workplaces where everybody can keep their physical distance or whatever? I'm not positive on that. I would assume that'll be a huge thing. I got a big portion of my backyard that could use a good seed, and I've been putting that off for a good 2-3 years now. So that might be a project for this spring.
Does seeding ever work? Does it work?
No, exactly.
You got to go sod, right?
I got a well-shaded backyard. So I think it depends on the kind of grass you got to make it work.
You should turn that into a chipping or a putting green.
I'm sorely tempted to.
Give the wife the news.
He has a golf course in his backyard.
I go on the golf course twice a day on the weekend and once a day to walk the dog. And we go on super, like the dog is like right now at this point, like again, another walk this far and out. Do we have to? The dog is turning 10. Like there are lots of people out there with dogs that have like puppies or young dogs that are chasing balls and they could be out there all day. My dog is like at about the 20-minute mark, kind of like looking up at me going, oh, we're going for one of the long ones, eh? And I said, I'm trying to pass some time. Sorry. Anyway, the golf course put up signs yesterday because people are out there chipping balls and putting. It's we just took... The sign said, we just took the covering off the greens. You got to let the greens grow. Please don't chip and putt on the greens because there's guys out there doing it right now.
Was there a picture of JJ on the sign?
That's who I think they're referring to.
For sure.
Absolutely.
And also for the dog, I can picture you're out there with your booklet, probably doing through your shot chart.
Exactly.
Mapping out. You got your little binocular thing that gives you the distance.
Exactly. It's a nice little smooth 8-iron in here.
What's the book that the caddy or the golfers usually carry for? What is there a special name for it?
That's a little green book. I don't know what it is. Yardage book.
The yardage book, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, as we think about what would have been, as I mentioned this morning, I guess I'll mention it again because not everybody was with us. This is maybe, if you're a sports fan, this is maybe the saddest week ever because this arguably could have been the greatest sports week ever if you're a big sports fan. Tonight would have been the final of March Madness. Wednesday would have been the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Thursday would have been the opening day of the Masters. Friday was kicking off an Easter weekend, which, as we know, can be anywhere from March to late April, but it all jived with the calendar this year, and the NBA playoffs would have started this weekend.
Wow. But for the for the fans of Tiger Woods and the Raptors, maybe this is just the way it should be, right?
The Raptors, keep the trophy.
Raptors forever the champion. Last year was one of my favorite Masters where we were out at the old Sugar Shack and we were scrambling to get home. to try to watch the ending of that. That was one of the more memorable. It's only a year, I wouldn't have a problem watching that. His reaction of winning and reaction to his kids and his family and everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, you can watch Masters replays all week on TSN. They're going to kick it off tonight at about, I believe it's either 7 or 7:30 with the final round of the 2003 Masters. You'll remember that. You just have to say Mike Weir. And that one. Yeah, Mike Weir. And you know what? To be honest with you, I remember his putt on 18. I remember him winning in a playoff. I haven't gone back. You can watch all the Masters on YouTube if you want. I've never done that, so I'm kind of keen to actually go back. And I'm not watching a lot of the old-time sports replays where I'm watching an entire game, but I'm kind of keen to go back and watch the last nine holes of Mike Weir. It just kind of steering it home to victory.
Not remembering a lot of the shots. What was the playoff like? I don't even know what the Masters uses.
Playoff, not to let the cat out of the bag, okay. But we might as well because it's already, I mean, it's 17 years ago. So it ended on the first hole. It was the 10th hole, which is the one where you hit down in the valley and then back up. And Len Matisse, who was the guy he was matched up with, absolutely butchered it.
Okay.
Like hit his second shot way left, was behind a tree. Like he played it like I would have.
Okay.
Now, he did it, he had like a triple. Yeah. I would end up with a 17 probably at the end of the day. But he absolutely, like Mike Weir won the playoff with a bogey.
Oh, okay.
So that lets you know it was not necessarily won with oh my God, it was the most tremendous shot of all time to allow him to win his first Masters. Now he won with a bogey. So anyway, you can watch that tonight on TSN. We'll take a break at 8:46 and we're going to come back. We'll talk OHL draft and the newest Ottawa 67s with General Manager James Boyd. He'll join us next here on TSN 1200. 18-year-old Nicholas Moldenhauer of Mississauga played this past year with the Mississauga team. 5'9", 154 pounds, 22 goals in 32 regular season games, and he was the first-round draft choice of the Ottawa 67s in the annual OHL draft on Saturday. The man who took him, apparently pleasantly surprised to find him there, is General Manager James Boyd, who joins us this morning on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. How are you doing this morning, James?
Doing great, guys.
Excellent. Thanks a lot for joining us. I think it's fairly typical of a general manager to say when it comes around to your pick, unless you have the first pick, wow, didn't expect that guy to be there. So how surprised were you to find Nicholas available in your number 20 spot?
Well, surprised. I think that, you know, some of the scuttlebutt around the rinks when the hockey season paused was that he was a probable top 10 pick. And that's what I saw, too. He does everything really well. He can score. He can play all three forward positions. He's responsible defensively. And he can play the game fast. He thinks fast and he can make plays with his feet moving. So we had Andre Tourney out in the second half of the season. He saw Moldenhauer as well. And he's equally excited because he recognizes all those qualities as well. We're really thrilled.
James, how much of the first round of the draft itself is also just confirming that it is for sure in the future that these young men want to play in the OHL versus going to college?
That has a lot to do with it. I think that, you see later in the first round, there was a couple of American kids that were drafted who, were legit candidates to make the U.S. national team. And that changed last week. That was kind of the 11th hour. So those players... It's just very recently that they've turned their attention to the OHL. So there was a lot of uncertainty there in the draft. And there are some players, still players that were drafted that have options. And, the NCAA is still an option for them. The key for the teams is gauging, what is the level of interest and what's the probability that they might come. And, we've drafted a number of those players in the past that we continue to work on. But we're fortunate that this year... The bulk of the players that we drafted are OHL-focused and really, really interested in Ottawa.
Adam Fantilli was the consensus number one player available. He played prep school last year. He's obviously from Ontario, played prep school, and is already committed to playing in the USHL. But he ended up going number 18 overall to Saginaw, even though he said, look, I'm keeping my options open. If he had been available, would you have taken him at 20?
Oh, yeah. I think if he was available... If he had intentions coming to the league, he was the first overall pick.
Yeah.
I think a consensus first overall pick, but if he was available at 20, it would have been a difficult discussion there because we felt so strongly about players, a number of them, Moldenhauer, Stonehouse, our second round pick was in the conversation there as well. So, can you go without a first round pick for a year, possibly two, maybe not get him at all when those guys are available? I don't think we would have done it.
James, how much does it work in your favor that it looks like we're seeing a lot more kids do the NCAA one and done? Brady Tkachuk saw Zegras just sign, Turcotte. When you go to a kid that's that age, recognizing he's probably got to play at least another 2 years at a lower program, then go to college versus saying, hey, come into the OHL, and by the time that happens, you're probably going to be drafted by the National Hockey League.
Yeah, that helps quite a bit. When we talk to players, that's a major concern, is where are they going to play for the next couple of years? And the trend with the NCAA teams, a number of them seems to be they like to push the players back to 19, 20 years old, so that they have older teams, which makes sense when they're building their teams. But the reality is that a lot of those high-end players are not going to be on campus for more than a year, before turning pro. So our focus is to, with our education system that we have in place, is to set up an education plan so those players are on a pathway where they can graduate from university in their mid-20s and, attend a Queen's or a University of Toronto or University of Ottawa or Carleton, quality institutions. If all their dreams come true, they're going to have to continue their schooling while they're in the NHL if they want to graduate. So that's what, with our system and our supports we have in place, that becomes appealing for a lot of players. But again, it's an individual decision, and a lot of it has to do with where they're going to play over the next couple of years.
With James Boyd, general manager of the 67s, the OHL draft was on Saturday. So your first two picks, James, are both forwards, both listed as right wingers. As you mentioned, Moldenhauer can play any of the three forward positions. You're graduating, or at least probably thinking that you're going to lose a fair bit of scoring again this year due to graduation. Does that come into the way you draft, or was it totally, hey, best player available who's ever available at 20, and in this case 26?
Yeah, that really, the way it unfolded was best player available, and I think that those are two guys. They're fast. They can score. They play with our team identity, and they're going to be quality OHL players. So there were some defensemen in the mix there, though. It was a tough conversation. Leading up to the pick. But these are things that we discussed over the last few weeks heading into the draft. We go over every possible scenario, who might be available. So we've already been through it. It's just a matter of making the pick. But we were hoping that there'd be a defenseman available with our 60th pick. And we were high on Thomas Sherman as well. So we were lucky that Sherman was available, and we were able to address our defense needs, both with Sherman and then the next pick, in the fourth round, Matthew Mayich, who's a full year younger, as a late birthday, a December birthday. So a lot of upside with those players too. So we addressed our needs. We got some depth at each position. We drafted two goalies as well for down the road. So we feel confident coming out of the draft that, we're in good shape moving forward.
It was thought to be a lighter year here in Ottawa. Five kids in the first round, DJ Smith's son. I won't get into whether you'd take them, but just thoughts, because I know local hockey fans would be interested. A scouting report on Sean Donovan's son and a scouting report on DJ Smith's son.
Yeah, Sean Donovan's son, major, major upside there. He skates like the wind. He skates like Sean, only he's a defenseman. You can imagine he's an offensive-minded player, and there's a lot of room for development there. So that makes sense for me that he would, in a draft where maybe the defense core wasn't as strong in years past, that, he would go that high. Because if you know the family and you know the athletic ability and the character there, the sky's the limit. And then Benny Bujold, who London took in the first round from that Kanata team, hard working player, a real leader on that team and exciting player to watch. So that one doesn't surprise me as well. And Smith is a really, really smart player. Yeah, so that Kanata team, there's a lot of eyes on that Kanata team. All three of those guys have big time upside. From hockey backgrounds as well. So, when you're doing the background and, there's a lot of boxes that get checked there. And then some of the other players, David Goyette, Cedric Gagnon, these guys are high-end players. It's no surprise that they went in the first round. So I know, or Zach Lavoie as well, to Mississauga. So I know maybe a lighter year in Ottawa, but there's a lot of Ottawa kids that were playing elsewhere that were really quality players. So we still consider those guys Ottawa kids, just a year where they went a little bit earlier you know, we didn't get a chance to draft him.
I know that, James, you're living in Toronto, so you see, and that's where the majority of the players drafted end up coming out of Toronto and southwestern Ontario. And you did, you know, you scout all year, and you would have seen, you know, all of the players that you would have drafted, either you or your scouts would have. How did, when everything went on pause, as we've been saying, since the middle of March, how did the last 3 weeks transpire as far as, were you talking to kids via, you know, Zoom or whatever, like doing online interviews with a lot of these kids? Is that what the last 3 weeks has been spent doing?
Yeah, exactly. We were having online meetings, Andre Tourney, Jan Eggert, myself. Our goalie coach, Charlie McTavish. And, you know, we're thinking on the fly because this is normally where we travel to the player's house and sit down at the kitchen table and, you know, address any questions that the parents might have about our organization and tell them a little bit of how we do things. So we had to create an online version, which, you know, worked out for the best. I think we got the message across and there was a lot of quality questions from the parents. And really, the goal is we want, you know, the parents to be comfortable, 16-year-old, you know, moving away from home. We want them to be comfortable that they're in good hands, that we care, you know, we care about their well-being. So I think with going over the schedule and the coaching staff and, you know, the way that we do things with our fitness and our skills work was really appealing to every player that we talked to. So I think it was really worthwhile. You know, a lot of work goes into those type of meetings, and, you know, you never have a chance to draft the player, but the work has to be done, so. It's been good occupying the time over the last couple of weeks too, and it's fun. It's always fun to talk to kids and talk to parents, even if you know, you might have an opportunity, you might not have an opportunity to select them. So it's been worthwhile.
Right, James Boyd, GM of the 67s, joining us just on that. And listen, you guys have put in a terrific program in the last two or three years, a more well-rounded program where the Ottawa 67s, and I'm not trying to blow wind up your skirt here, but are really seen as a real destination place. And maybe that wasn't the case before. When you're calling up, when you're visiting with kids and with parents, are you getting that feedback right away? Whereas Ottawa may not have been a destination. It's a long ways away when a kid is living in Toronto. Whereas it may not have been a destination before, now it certainly has changed the perception of Ottawa.
Yeah, I can't speak to what it was like before. I think that definitely when your team matures and you're at the top of the junior cycle and you know you're finishing in first place, it definitely that helps recruitment in itself. So there's that component, but it's also that's where the hard work has to be done. You know, that's we're staying at the top of the cycle. You know, you've got to work twice as hard, picking at the you know, the last part of the first round or last part of every round, really that includes the import draft. You've got to make sure that you're drafting from close to 100% of the pool of the players. And so that means that, you know, we got to get in the car, you got to drive to Chicago, you got to go into Michigan and where you're, you know, especially with those parents where it's 12 or 15 hours away from home, you got to lay out, you know, the advantages of playing in Ottawa. And I think that, you know, it appeals to a lot of people. So I think we have momentum on the recruiting front with the reputation of our organization. And rightfully so, our coach has done a tremendous job. We do have a very, very strong program recognized by NHL teams and, you know, all teams at the higher level. So we work extremely hard to get out there and spread the message and, you know, so far it's been paying off.
How much is this also getting as much information as you can into the database that, hey, even 3 or 4 years from now, active at the trade deadline, that you've got a background on some of these kids and their families?
That's part of it, too. You know, once they're drafted, you know, we really are not supposed to be talking to them. So this is kind of a last meeting to get your message across. And we haven't had it happen yet, but this will be over the next couple of years, too, that when it comes time, you know, the trade deadline or something like that, that, you know, players are excited and comfortable to be coming and that we have an idea of what the players like, what the, you know, the values are and what the family's like. So, yeah, all of it is worthwhile, gathering as much information as we can. In this draft year, you know, has been different, but I think that we have the information that we need moving forward.
Last one for you, James. We're going to have Noel Hoffenmeyer on the show in about a half hour or so. Ends up signing a pro contract with the Toronto Marlies of the American Hockey League. When you heard that news, what sort of feel did you have on that?
really, really happy for Noel. Shocked that, you know, it's taken this long. And, you know, I mentioned last week that we had him long gone. The hugs and the kisses, you know, the hugs and the handshakes were done last year. We're shocked that he was back, and I'm not shocked that he signed a pro contract now. Quality kid, great player.
All right, sounds good. Really appreciate the time, as always, and we'll look forward to catching up with you again down the road.
Thanks very much, guys.
All right, there's James Boyd, GM of the Ottawa 67s, joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, brought to you by Pizza Perks at Gabriel Pizza. Download the Gabriel Pizza Perks app and sign up today. We'll take a break. We're going to talk to Eric Macromella. Certainly, there are some this whole thing of when sports is going to come back, and now Donald Trump weighing in and all this. It's a bit of a moving target. So the latest on all we've heard with Eric Macromella coming up. And as we mentioned, Noel Hoffenmeyer will join us after 9:30 as we continue along here. You are listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.